I'd use one. All right, it's 6:40. We're going to call this meeting to order. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Michaels?
Present.
Rodriguez?
Here.
Sexton?
Here.
Storr?
Present.
Straub?
Here.
Esri?
Here.
Locke?
Here. All right, so first up, we need a motion to approve the agenda or make any amendments to it.
Motion to approve.
Okay, I will note that the sheriff will discuss the info the sheriff has provided us, but we do not have the sheriff speaking tonight. And the Board of Health was to participate via Zoom, but we're having technical difficulties, so that may have to change. And do we know if Public Health or CUPHD is here yet, or will they be here?
They are not here at this time.
Okay. So, Michelle, you'll be the only one possibly. But, yeah, we'll vote. Motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, there we go. I see no public for participation. Is there any board communication? No? All right. Now, new business. Need to select a vice chair. Would anybody like to nominate themselves or others?
I'll nominate Diane Michaels.
I'll second that.
Any?
No, I think Diane would be great.
All right.
I do, yeah.
Seeing no others? No other? All right. All in favor of Diane?
Aye.
All right, Diane, welcome to vice chair. Oh, do we need a second on appointing a vice chair? I spoke to Kyle.
We did.
Okay, we got. Oh, there we go. Perfect. All right. Now, moving on, we have our opioid settlement information. Michelle, you are up.
All right, I just have a couple of quick slides to make sure that we're all on the same page as to what this is and what we can do with it. So this is from a lawsuit against the opioid manufacturers. So first, just to make sure we don't make any assumptions as to people's level of experience or education. Really fast, opioid is a type of pain medication. It's equivalent to like hydrocodone, morphine, methadone, fentanyl. Those are all opioids. Heroin is an opioid, obviously illegal. The increased prescription use of opioids began in the 90s, really peaked in the late 90s in overdoses, and has been declared a national public health crisis since 2017. So there was a big class action lawsuit against the manufacturers and distributors for very irresponsible promotion and distribution and encouraged usage of opioids, and that's where this money is coming from. So just to be super, super clear, if you get any questions from the public, this is not tax revenue in any capacity. This is settlement from a lawsuit. Yeah, that's why we're getting the money. Yes. Yeah. So Champaign County signed on to the class action lawsuits, and that's why we have these funds.
Do you remember, Michelle, or do you have the information? I was on the board when we agreed to, but do you remember what year that was and maybe the month or have that information? It's been a while ago, I know, but.
No, but I think Matt does.
Okay.
Of course he does.
So the little background blurb on that is the Champaign County joined the national suits around late 2017 through a representation agreement with law firms Myron Flowers LLC, Simons Hanley Conroy LLC, and more locally Kester and Bradley LLP that was set up by State's Attorney Julia Reitz on behalf of the county, getting us connected with those national lawsuits that were beginning at that time and really took steam around 2017. We entered into a representation agreement, which had followed a presentation to the county board that had occurred in fall of 2017, and that might be what you're recalling, which laid out the opioid epidemic, the potential causes of action for Champaign County, and theories for potentially recoverable damages. So our lawsuit was filed circa early 2018, and in February 2018 was consolidated with, quote, the Cook County case in what became the statewide vehicle for Illinois counties joining the national suits. So then after that, there's an extremely complicated procedural history, including a bankruptcy filing by Purdue Pharma. Over the years, the case has continued churning at the national level, pursued by many attorneys, including the Illinois Attorney General's Office. We've received periodic updates since then. And then the two quote-unquote big cases have settled, hence the county receiving this money. Those are referred to very generally as number one, which would be the J&J and distributor settlement, including Johnson & Johnson, Janssen, Cardinal, Amerisource, Bergen, and McKesson. And then big suit number two is quote-unquote the pharmacy settlement with Teva, Allergan, CVS, Walgreens, and Walmart. And since the last time I wrote down all of these notes, both settlements are now fully resolved and in the process of paying out. And the county, when we want to go back for up-to-date information on exactly what's coming through, what we can expect, payment history, flowcharts, in addition to the information that's on the National Opioid Settlement website that I believe was distributed to the members, the county has also signed up to, through the client portal that the administration has access to for more detailed information about what we can expect to receive in those agreements.
And Matt, isn't there one outstanding still suit? Isn't Meyer have one?
I believe that's correct. I'd have to go back on the national website to double check on that, but these are the two that we have in hand right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Matt. That is the one, I'm sure, because I remember the presentation, taking a vote on whether or not we were going to join the group action lawsuit and such. Thank you.
Matt, I just have one question. Johnson & Johnson's been very public in their bankruptcy. That has no effect on this, correct?
Yeah. Periodically, I'll see either websites or news articles that get forwarded around, and if it's not immediately apparent to me, I also have a contact at Myers and Flowers to double check and say, hey, do we need to freak out about this? And most of the time they say, no, that's something completely different from us. So I think about a month ago there was another big news story about the somebody's bankruptcy. I asked them and they responded very promptly that said, no, that's separate from us. So we're good.
So we're getting funding, the city of Champaign has signed in and they're receiving funding, and then all of our surrounding counties are also all receiving funding. So if there was any interest in some type of collaboration, I think those would be like our top entities that we would want to talk with.
Except Urbana, correct?
They did not sign into the class action lawsuit. So there is a detailed multi-page document on what the money can be spent on, but in terms of your considerations, there's basically three categories: prevention of opioid usage, treatment of current opioid usage, and analysis of opioid usage in the county. So as you start thinking of ideas, you know, we're definitely can go back and look in detail and make sure it fits in, but as long as you are within these three categories, it's a very safe bet that you're on the right track and it's something that the money can be used for. So far we have a little under $600,000 that we have received at this point. The payments are scheduled out till 2038, and by then it'll be another $1.5 million. On average, the payment amounts vary yearly. But if you average an estimate that we're going to get about $90,000 per year, you would be safe to spend at that rate through 2038. If we spent all of the 578 immediately, then year over year. So just real fast, I know there's data on deputy activity regarding opioid use. I reached out to the coroner and got death information. So that's the rest of your slides, and we can flip through them pretty quickly. But we do have opioid-related deaths in Champaign County. They spiked in 2021 pretty severely. They've tapered off since then, but still, you know, people are still being killed by opioid abuse in Champaign County. Champaign-Urbana obviously are the highest two locations. Rantoul's right behind them at number three. And then people coming from out of county and dying here probably at the hospitals would be the next highest location. But they're also spread out across the county, everywhere, you know, Villa Grove, Tolono, Thomasboro, like they're across the whole county. They're not localized anywhere. Age-wise, again, across the spectrum, pretty solid use, but the category of biggest concern is 50 to 59-year-olds, and then right behind that, 30 to 39-year-olds. So a little bit older population than I think your average drug use that you're thinking of. And I think that that demonstrates that prescription initiation into opioid use, right? They get prescribed it for some kind of pain issue, and then all of a sudden they're addicted and it's an actual problem. Also not specific to any race, spread across white, Hispanic, black, and Asian, as per the coroner's reports. So those are just some really basic facts I wanted everybody to have as we got started on the conversation.
Anybody have any questions for Michelle, who has spent the most time studying this data so far? Aaron?
These aren't necessarily directly for you, Michelle. These would be more directed, I guess, towards the sheriff's department. But if you happen to know, or anyone else happen to know, the Narcan and the supplies that the sheriff's department has, are they budgeted through the county, or and where do those come from, and mm-hmm. you know, roughly how much per, I guess maybe per year, although that varies, or per dose, I guess, does it cost? Those were some questions that I had, but obviously the sheriff is not here tonight.
Yeah, so we did some initial, I did some initial calling around and asking questions when we first started thinking about how we could spend this money to see if we could identify immediate needs or holes. And last time I talked to the sheriff, Narcan is provided through a state grant along with training on how to use it. So in terms of putting funding behind that, that's not necessarily a need for the sheriff's department. I think something we could consider putting funding behind would be outreach to the smaller police departments to make sure they're aware of Narcan and how to use it, and the other resources that they could get access to if they wanted to utilize those things. And if, you know, they're reluctant, maybe we just buy them some Narcan, you know, like that kind of thing. But I think reaching outside of this, the sheriff's office is a good start. From my conversations with the sheriff, his deputies are very well trained on it, use it on a regular basis, and are all appreciative that they have it. So they're not really our target audience for this. So
that answers my question. Thank you. I was wondering if maybe it wasn't funded through another.
Yeah.
But if it was funded through the county, you know, that was maybe something that we could put some of it
yeah.
towards. Thank you.
Kyle, did you have something you wanted to say?
I know that Narcan is used frequently by the fire departments in town. Do we know if the like rural fire protection departments are they equipped with Narcan?
So I did get to the point of compiling a list of all of the volunteer and smaller fire department chiefs and leaders, but I did not have the capacity to reach out to them and find out if they have training on it. Do they have Narcan? Would they be interested in that? I did at one point talk with CUPHD about how they could help us with that, and they did suggest that with some funding, they could develop an outreach position specifically to these other police, fire, and ambulance in the more rural areas to reach out to them and make sure they know what Narcan is, they know how to get it, they know how to use it, and that they're reaching out to them on a regular yearly basis, reminding them to check their supply, train any new officers, training any new firefighters, that kind of stuff. So I think that's definitely a need that should be explored as a possible funding opportunity.
Diane?
On the piggyback of that, I can see where most of these departments have monthly meetings.
Mm-hmm.
And what you would do as part of maybe the prevention
mm-hmm.
is have a training and they all go there. Because,
yeah.
I mean, I know the ones in our area, my husband was part of also, that they do have monthly meetings and they have specific things they train on. And that way you would have a whole group of them all together at once.
Mm-hmm.
And that may be something that's you, PhD
yeah.
or the public health or Board of Health or somebody would come in and do.
Yeah.
I think that's really important, especially for all of the outside areas. I think Champaign-Urbana probably are pretty well covered, but you never know. They might need something too.
Yeah, I kind of went down a rabbit hole with the CU PhD resident experts on this and their outreach efforts. And along this vein, they have had really good success in Rantoul with, I think they called it like a community Narcan project. So it's just like storefront businesses, bars, restaurants, they just went in, gave them Narcan, trained their staff on how to use it. I think they hang like a sign in the window, it just indicates that they have it. And they thought that was working very well and was really encouraging community conversation and engagement, and also having just it spread out more and available in more places. Because I think that's exactly, and that's the path that I went down when I was talking to CU PhD, is Champaign-Urbana is very solid on resources for this. They can get somebody what they need quite quickly in the midst of an overdose. It's everything outside of Champaign-Urbana where the response times are significantly delayed, or there is no Narcan, or there's no knowledge of what an overdose looks like and how to respond immediately and quickly and help the person.
So, Michelle, speaking to that rabbit hole with CU PhD, since you're our lone speaker at this point, I'm going to put you on the spot and see how much you remember from your conversation with them. Are there Narcan vending machines so far in the county anywhere? Have we? And I know the answer already. Did you explore how much mm-hmm. it would cost for us to fund more where they might be needed, and so on?
Yes. So and don't imagine like a vending machine that like twirls around and spits at Narcan. It's not like that kind of vending machine. But it's the concept, right? So yes, there's one at CU PhD that gets heavy use. Very, very frequently used. They say like a pretty consistent group of people that access it and bring their friends, and access it. And they've had success with, being there in a very non-judgmental, supportive manner. And then when the people are ready to actually get help to address the addiction, they already have a relationship with the individuals at CU PhD. So they said that their program, that their vending machine at their facility has been very, very successful. When I talked to them, they had just installed one on campus that had a more of a larger variety of supplies. And I do believe it actually had Narcan, like just, and theirs was completely anonymous. They could just go up, select something without having to talk to anybody and take it back. And they didn't have a lot of data except for that they had to restock it a lot, but it had only been out for a couple of months. Those are the only ones. They have a delivery service to Rantoul. So if someone calls CU PhD and asks for clean needles or other materials to make it safer to utilize drugs, they'll deliver something out to them. No questions asked, but they don't have a vending machine out there. So in my conversations with them, they said that they would really love to have additional funding to put them throughout the county, like kind of hitting maybe our four directions. So like an actual one in Rantoul, Mahomet, you know, Tolono, and maybe even St. Joe, so that they're in much closer proximity to more people, and that they would be willing to talk about with, you know, financial funding, being responsible for putting those up and maintaining them. The initial startup costs for a vending machine would be about $120,000 just to get it set up and put in place. And then the maintenance cost, I think, was
70.
I was going to say between 60 and 80. So, okay, yeah. Yeah. Depending, again, on the frequency of supply usage and stuff like that. So, you know, I guess the good thing would be it costs more, right, because – the supplies are being used more frequently. And they, of course, would really like to, you know, couple that with the community education program and then being able to just really provide a path for the users of the vending machine to just go straight into assistance when they're ready to address their addiction.
Diane?
Sorry, I got a lot of questions here. So basically, what that idea encompasses is CUPHD takes the liability. We would not have any liability. We would just be possibly funding that position. And then to keep it maintained, is that something that, you know, that they would raise funds for? I mean, because you don't want to start something and let it go, especially something that's important. Or is there a part that we would also be responsible for?
We had very preliminary conversations about that, and it wasn't with necessarily Julie herself, but the indication seemed to be that if, you know, if we can commit to helping them for a while to get it going over the years, as we know that our settlement funding is dwindling, that they're going to permanently take over the support. And maybe the county as a general fund needs to kick in a little bit of money every year to keep them going, but like they know that our almost $2 million is a very set number that's not indefinite. So,
Dr. Storr.
Thank you. What is the shelf life of Narcan?
I think it's pretty long. I think Jen has it on her, so. Well, yeah. And while she digs, another thing that I think would be nice to have funding for would be to make sure that we have Narcan at Bennett Administration Center in some very specific, you know, secure but obvious locations that the staff know about, and in the event that the public needs it, just like an AED, it's accessible to people.
So I've had this in my little bag for probably about 6 months at this point, and it expires in June of 2025. I know that it is somewhat heat sensitive, but what I was told during my training is that even if it becomes ineffective, if you administer it, it will not have any negative effects on the person who has received the dose.
Julia.
Okay, so I feel like I need to jump in here, otherwise we're going to spend all night talking about Narcan. This lawsuit was initiated with the goal of getting funding to help prevent opioid addiction. There is, and I think Matt has provided this to everyone, a long list of different things that can be funded by these settlement funds, a very long list, a very comprehensive list. I don't know what role I play here, but I'm going to throw this out. My suggestion is that rather than you all try to decide how to use this money, that you all try to decide a process to seek suggestions from the people out there as to what you should fund and how they're going to use the money. Because otherwise you're going to end up, I think, down a rabbit hole that you don't want to be in.
Excellent suggestion. It's why our list of speakers tonight included experts that, due to technical situations and I'm not sure what happened to PhD.
Right. But I'm saying not even so much them coming and telling you, but how are you going to put out a request for, you know, for other agencies or organizations to say this is, you know, what we would need and this is what, you know, I mean, that's what we've done in the past when we have chunks of money like this. That's what we did with delinquency prevention funds. You know, so that's just my suggestion. That was what I envisioned in 2017 when we started this process, that there would be a bank of money that, you know, local organizations, healthcare providers, the sheriff, you know, could come and say, I would like X amount of these dollars to do this sort of thing.
Emily.
It seems a point made perhaps too late. We are here. We are convened as a committee. The strength of a committee, the purpose of a committee is to deal with rabbit holes. What's more, committees are well suited to educate the public and having public meetings that are streamable. This is an issue that has lacked a public forum since the 1990s, since since the waves, I guess, began, and obviously multiple waves. I think not only are we well suited to handle information and make decisions about the information that is given to us, we are also capable of soliciting input from people who are interested and people who have experience in this area, included populations that are directly impacted, which really needs to be considered alongside those of administration. So again, I think that this is the correct approach. I think this is money that is earned quite literally by people dying, by people in the county dying. So the idea that we would use we would just solicit requests and just rubber stamp, I think is almost...
That's really not what I said. That is not at all what I said.
You said a bank.
What?
You said a bank.
I didn't say a bank.
Yes, you did.
No, I did not.
Okay.
I did not say...
It seems like getting into a back and forth
I don't know what you think I said. What I said was I'm suggesting that you talk about a process to solicit proposals from people...
I think the chair's ready to intervene.
To use the money.
Julia, I'm going to cut you off right here just at this point, only because we are currently with Michelle, and she's helpfully filling in the other parts. When we get to the part of the agenda where the sheriff was to speak, we have the sheriff's information, which he has provided. I also have a statement which he asked me to relay to everybody. So we have, okay. we're working our way through there. We're just talking about the options for Narcan at this point. There are other issues that we could do. We could talk about medically accept FDA-approved treatment to combat addiction. We could talk about that. That prevents further harm. There's lots of things we haven't gotten to yet because we're still in this issue. But we'll move along, and we will come back. And we are open to speaking to many, many, many stakeholders, especially the ones who show up. So... back to if anyone else would like to make a comment.
That concludes my comment.
I have a question.
Jen.
I don't know how far you want to get on this, but when you talk about a vending machine and you say it's not the swirling thing and that it spits out the Narcan, so there's some kind of staffing that happens there. How does... If we're bringing it to some place like Rantoul that needs more access, how do we ensure that that happens?
Yeah, so obviously the one at CUPHD is staffed a lot because it's there at their building and people can just walk in and say, hey, can I get some stuff out of the vending machine? I do think the one on campus is self-serving, but has obviously a slightly different demographic that it's serving and has different, slightly different things that are in it. For the ones that would be outside of Champaign-Urbana, I think the initial idea was that there would be set hours that a person would be there, right? So someone from CUPHD would be with the machine to give access, restock it, give access to it. And again, they had talked about taking kind of the order system, right? So if people aren't available to come at the specific time that it's time to be in Muhammad or whatever, and they want to call in and ask for something, it could be taken out to them. I asked if that was realistic, given the needs of the population that might be using these materials. And they said that in other areas it has worked, like in larger cities or other counties, people do actually pay attention to when it's available, utilize that time, or use the call and request option to get supplies. And they said at their machine here, they've noticed quite a few people pushing the message of I think this is the correct phrase, don't use alone. And so pushing that safety message, if you don't use alone, then they'll come in groups to the machine to get their supplies and then go do their business together somewhere else.
Dr. Storr.
What really attracted me, my attention, was the expense of the Narcan vending machine. I mean, at $100,000, that easily is about what we would what we have for our annual budget. So I'm kind of open to suggestions on maybe supporting other efforts of folks who are kind of on the ground.
Going back to our slides, we had a three-prong purpose here: prevention, treatment, and analysis. So I think that is also how we probably should look at this. The prevention, I don't know if we're talking about youth. If this age category is in the 30 to 60 group, do we target that, working people? I mean, I don't know. And so maybe that's where some of this analysis comes in from our local, whether they're the health departments or our police departments. Some of these smaller communities don't have a police department, but they've got a city council or an administrator or a mayor, and they may know some of this information. But we do have a three-pronged purpose here. And you're right, at $90,000 a year, it's a lot, but it's not. So I think, you know, trying to decide what we need to target is going to be difficult in the beginning.
Yeah, I think, and we can just transition to discussion, or we can come back to this, or you can tell me to stop and we can come back to it. But I think there's actually a lot of conversation to be had about the analysis piece, because I think we're in a different place in terms of being the county board. We need to be thinking about a demographic that is not does not have urban accessibility to public transportation, to closer resources, to more public education that just exists on our billboards and all kinds of things. And also, as the county board, I think we need to look at things like how does opioid use impact the use of our deputies and our state's attorney and our public defender, and can we identify specific ways in those uses that we can target the money to help the people and use our resources as a county more effectively as well. You know, just some real basic initial things like, let's do some heat mapping of where the calls are going. Do we have hotspots? Do we, you know, have we done a needs assessment out in the rural community? So things that I still think that CUPHD and GIS can assist us with, but I think there's a lot of information that we could gather that would make, you know, deciding which rabbit hole to go down a little bit clearer as we move forward.
Basic question, because I'm a baby on the board here. How much of the money would need to go towards that needs assessment? You know, we're sitting on this $500,000 right now. We want to make the best use of it. Obviously, a needs assessment is necessary. But
Matt can correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't believe that the requirements like have a percentage that you have to spend a certain amount on prevention, treatment, or assessment. Yeah. That's your decision to make.
I guess I was asking, generally in the past, when GIS has assisted us in a needs assessment, ballpark.
I mean, we would need to give them a scope of work that we're asking for. I can't imagine it's going to be like a significant amount of money, because they're really taking data from METCAD and data from the coroner and combining it into a mapping system. In terms of a needs assessment of like verbal communication with people who are actively using opioid, that would be a CUPHD conversation as to what that scope of work would look like. I think in a needs assessment in terms of polling the, you know, local law enforcement, fire, and that kind of stuff to see where they're at, what their interests might be, how much they feel like they spend responding to these kinds of calls, that would, you know, be another cost, that kind of stuff. So I can't give you a dollar amount. Well, I have no idea.
Since the sheriff isn't here, I just want to draw some attention to the numbers that he's provided us. And this is calls where deputies have been on have been dispatched where Narcan's been administered, either by the deputy or by a reporting person, by EMS, by whatever. So from 2020 to now, the deputies have been, there's been a grand total of 74 times that Narcan has been administered when a deputy's been there. 11 have resulted in death. 63 have gone on to live another day. In most of the cases, it's been EMS delivering it. But it's not exactly, you know, it's all across the board. There's fire, there's EMS, there's people who just had it as part of their job. The statement that Dustin had asked me to give was that, obviously, he hopes that people never overdose in the first place. Obviously, the use of the settlement money is up to us. He's asking that we put as much as we can towards prevention. There's requests for a dog. I don't think we can use it for enforcement, nor do I think we should use it for enforcement when we have needs for prevention, for treatment, and for analysis. If there's any further questions on Dustin's information, hopefully he'll join us next time. Yes, Emily.
I have a clarifying question. Yeah. So we've spent the majority of our time talking about Narcan. Mm-hmm. Have we heard any entity suggest that a lack of Narcan is a problem?
No, we've heard from anyone I've spoken to has held it out as what's the most effective way to mm-hmm. prevent death, obviously, at the time when an overdose is happening. There are no expert I've spoken to locally has talked about the FDA-approved medications. Nobody has raised fentanyl test strips, which would probably be helpful for for individuals to have, and that would be something that I was hoping to ask CUPHD and the Board of Health about. Mm-hmm. We haven't really heard much about that.
Needle exchanges,
that sort of thing. Needle exchanges. It sounds like CUPHD is already doing some of that, mm-hmm. but I wish they were here.
Absolutely. I just wanted to refocus our conversation. Yes. I know that we are wrapping our minds around Narcan.
Because that's what we have the information of. But yes. Yeah.
Thank you. Yes. But also, this is money that we have been getting from the state and a resource that we have been getting from the state for some time. This is not new. Us using the money to increase access to Narcan or to increase the quantity of Narcan that we get is a little maybe 5 years ago. So I just wanted to keep that top of mind.
Yes, Chris.
We have the state's attorney here. We heard from Michelle. We heard from the sheriff. And I wondered, you know, since the state's attorney has taken some of her time to come here this evening, if she'd share some of her thoughts with us.
Julia, would you like to?
Well, I thought I did, but I was pretty much told to stop talking. So if you want to hear my ideas, Chris, I'd be more than happy to share them with you, since in 2017, I was the one who sought our involvement so that we could get this funding so that we could help address this issue in our community. It's very important to me. It's something I'm very proud of, and I appreciate being involved in the discussion. So, and as your attorney, I also caution you on taking on liability and responsibility that is not yours, you know. So when I suggest that we talk about how to request proposals from people, organizations, entities in the community, and then you analyze those proposals and decide what you want to fund with this money, that's not to suggest it's not your responsibility to figure that out. It's to suggest that there are entities out there, organizations, who have needs and might not know that you have this money available to help them do this important work. I strongly urge you not to be focused on a Narcan vending machine in the Bennett building that we somehow maintain and then take on some liability for, frankly. I think there's a lot of amazing, hardworking organizations out there and within our own county. I mean, we have Drug Court, And one of the things that can be funded is opioid addiction-specific treatment. That's on page E9 of the document, Support Treatment and Recovery Courts that provide evidence-based options for persons with opioid use addiction and any co-occurring mental health conditions. We're trying to start a mental health court, and opioid addiction is a huge issue. So I think there's opportunities within our own systems, within the probation department, to use this funding to enhance the work that's already being done, absolutely. I think there's a lot of options. Again, there might be organizations in the domestic violence arena that might, the homelessness community organizations may have some creative ideas. Schools, absolutely. You know, there's a lot of different, and there's pages and pages and pages of different options for you. And I really think that you need to use this, your time to figure out how are we going to ask others, you know, how are we going to say we've got this, these funds, how are we going to use them? You know, how can we help you do what you're doing, do something creative or different? So that was my concept.
I do just want to reiterate, I wasn't asking you to never talk. It was in the position where we were still working through with the information that we had at this moment. The goal for tonight had been to hear from the stakeholders on the ground. They're not here, unfortunately. So that's where we got into this conversation. But we thank you for your presence. We thank you for your input. And we will consider it always because you are our lawyer and we do trust you. And we thank you for signing on to this lawsuit because people have been hurt, people have died, and it's two waves ago in terms of the opioids where this money's coming from. And so we need to, as a group, come together and find the best ways to use this money that you got for us, thank you, to address what's happening now. And it would have been better if we had the lay of the land from our experts, who unfortunately we don't have here tonight.
I think what's really exciting about this money is the flexibility that we have with it. And, you know, as the state's attorney is saying, like, we already have people in our system that we could help directly. Like, you know, we could help someone recently out of jail going through drug court with rent, utilities, like job training, like tangible things to move them away, you know, to make it as, you know, possibly successful for them to get away from their addiction as we can. Like when do we ever have those kinds of opportunities to use money like that? So I think this goes back to our analysis conversation of, like, how are we already interacting with people who have opioid use in our county system already? Where are they at? Like, what do they need? How can we assist them? And then we can start figuring out from those and from the programs that already exist, because I would completely agree, we do not want to be executing any of this ourselves. All of this money should be funneled through a third party so that we are not absorbing any of the liability or cost overhead or any of those things. But we can be giving very specific direction of the philosophical intent and goal of the money that we want the institution to, in how we want them to use it.
Chris.
Building on what Michelle brought up about drug court, one of the first things that I take a little credit for was trying to get a halftime, raising the deputy from a quarter time to a halftime, big whoop, for drug court. And reason that I was so insistent on that was because of what the officer told me and how he saw his role and how it was helping the folks in drug court. And building on what Michelle said and a little bit on what Julia said, what all of us have kind of said around here, I'd suggest that one of the first things that we might consider is sort of a needs assessment, and that seeking input from boots on the ground like the deputy in drug court and CU PhD when they can provide input, and maybe some of the hospitals and, you know, some of the first responders to seek some suggestions from those folks as well as the administrative groups. Thank you.
This might be putting the cart before the horse at this point, because I agree that we do need an analysis. We do need a needs assessment to see what cumulatively our experts say. But speaking of the hospitals, people come here to die. They overdose in other counties and they come here to die. All of our contiguous counties are also involved. So would people be open to collaborating or at least finding out what our neighbors are doing and maybe a regional plan of some sort? Julia, yes.
I think that is actually a good use of the funds as well, because the funds are distributed based on population. And so our neighboring counties did receive the funds, but because they are such smaller populations, the amount of money they received is much less than what we received. Although their issue, frankly, with opioid addiction is probably greater in some senses. So I do think it would be the best use of this money to collaborate if they are willing to do that. It will give them access to resources they might not have.
Does anybody else have thoughts at this time of how we should proceed?
Just a quick one. I wholeheartedly agree with that. We've always done better when we can collaborate with others, and you know, if we can take a little bit of what they've already done and use it for ourselves, then we're ahead of the game on that. So it's always good to find out what's going on in neighborhoods. But I just real quick, Matt, if you have it, when exactly did this settle? What year? Which I know it's not completely, and I think we only received these funds this year, so we haven't had them very long. So it's all very new.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. That's what I thought. Thanks.
In that vein, I just want to clarify, too, none of the money is appropriated for this year. It's all appropriated starting in 24. Perfect. If you want to spend it this year, we can, but we got to do the whole budget amendment, two-thirds vote, blah, 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 and I would prefer you don't make me have to figure out how to do a budget amendment right now. So, and it doesn't sound like we're ready to start writing checks anyway. So just so you're aware, but all of the money that we have so far is appropriated for next year if you do find something you really love and want to invest in.
Jen first.
I wonder, just I think, correct me if I'm wrong, at this point we're just trying to feel forward for like next steps.
Yeah.
Okay, just wanted to make sure I was on the same page. I wonder if maybe for our next meeting we should invite local stakeholders back when we talk, you know, invite maybe the Board of Health and CUPHD to actually come into our room with our mask or whatever we need to do. talk to the, like, have somebody from the Sheriff's Department if they would like to come, or, you know, if you all want to present something from, you know, the state's attorney's office, that would be great. Or whatever we need to do, let's find out maybe what we need to do here in at home first. And then maybe the next meeting we talk to other counties. That's just my very humble suggestion.
As that was my plan for tonight and moving forward, I second that. That's awesome. I like the way you think. Dr. Storr, did you have something to add?
I sure did, and it chased right out of my mind. I want to get back to what Michelle said about not being able to do something this year, and given the urgency of the problem of overdoses, is there some way that you can think of that we can block off some money, even if only half of it, say, or a few thousand dollars for needs assessment to a unidentified to be determined sort of thing so that we can get something rolling?
Well, I would say that, you know, it's early September. If we wanted to do a needs assessment, we need to figure out who we're doing that with. We need to outline what they're going to assess, who they're going to assess, put together an IGA. So they're not going to get started until after the first of the year. So we could definitely, you know, get the conversation and the process going to get a needs assessment done, but I don't think it's realistic to think that we're going to be spending money on a needs assessment before the beginning of next year anyway, even if we had money available right now.
I'd also, before we start talking about maybe putting money towards a need assessment, I would like to know what we already know in the community. Like, has CUPHD already done something like this? They have a whole department. I want to know the needs. I just don't want to throw good money after money that already.
I would just, in my many conversations with CUPHD, like, they have a wealth of information on just the status of the issue in Champaign-Urbana, right? So you can absolutely have them come in. We don't need to talk about vending machines. We don't even need to talk about, like, what to do. Just tell us what the actual problem is and what it looks like on the ground in Champaign-Urbana. And I think that's a good place to start. I think we bring in the drug court people and ask them, what are you dealing with all day, every day? Maybe ask a couple of someone from the sheriff's office, what are the deputies dealing with? I think talking to the corrections officers would be useful as well. What are you dealing with in the jails all day, every day on this kind of stuff? And, you know, we don't, like, it can be the worst doom and gloom conversation ever. We don't need to get into what to do, but just what is actually happening, right? Like, and I think that's, yeah.
Yeah.
Diane.
Me again. I agree with that. I think we need to ask our own departments that we have a responsibility toward, and we would probably have some statutory responsibilities to some of this stuff anyway. So I think that's important. And then the other thing is, if Champaign's receiving money, I don't want to do what they're doing. And we need to be careful that we're not overlapping or overlaying on something they're doing. And I don't know if maybe getting a hold of them and saying, what have you decided, or how are you going about it? And if they've already got some data, let's borrow it, or whatever we can do reciprocating there. But we want to be careful that we don't overlap on things and we take care of our responsibilities as the county, that we already have departments.
I agree with that. Hearing that there is a need in Rantoul, would anybody be interested in hearing what they're doing on the ground in Rantoul as well?
Yeah,
perfect.
Yeah.
Matt?
Just a technical note, the Exhibit E that you all have distributed out, where it's the big list of things that you can spend it on, the most useful part of that document for your purpose of exactly what you're talking about, I think, is pages E4 through E15. So basically the last, you know, four-fifths of the document. If you just go down that list of, you know, while you're going through this whole process, or, well, you know, if people come and pitch to you or you're discussing about something, just have somebody spend, I would suggest, two sentences just saying, which of these approved uses do you think you fall under, and just name the subsection and line, and it should be super easy. And that way no one has to fish around about, oh, is this or is this not something that's covered? Because if you go down all this list that thankfully the people that wrote up the big settlement were very detailed about, you'll see things that'll make you think, oh, that makes me think of this, or that makes me think of this. And you don't have to guess if drug court is covered, because it's specifically spelled out that recovery court's covered. So in terms of making it easy for people to pitch, we know this is covered and here's why, just cite to that part of the exhibit, and that should really help the process, I would think.
Any other thoughts before we move on? Looks like we've, yeah, I know, right? The poor agenda is dead. I apologize to everybody when none of the speakers show up. So we've done discussion, I believe. Is there a further? Wait, we got Michelle.
I would just say, given the speed the government moves at, I know that talking to the other counties isn't the number one priority, but if there's no objection, I'd like to initiate figuring out who over there we need to talk to and telling them we want to have a conversation with them. So when we're ready, we can maybe get that done in like the 30 days that we attempt to get that done, because we haven't had any contact with them. I haven't had any direct contact with the city of Champaign. I know that they're trying to figure out ideas and are kind of in the same boat of us. It's like, we have money with not much restriction and we have no idea what to do with it. So I do believe they were going to talk to CUPHD as well, but I don't know what they're going, where they're going with that. So I can also kind of get a contact over there to see who's leading that effort as well.
Thumbs up. Everybody kind of agree on that one. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Proceed. With great apologies that tonight did not work with our speakers, we have to discuss when our next meeting will be. any suggestions? Should we meet again? Should we try for this month? Should we just wait till next month when we have some more information available and we can try and fit the speakers back in next month? All right.
Could we just get some very clear articulation of who you want to hear from first next, so that we have some... I have, not me, but I have someone else in the office who does have capacity to make phone calls and try to get people lined up for this, but I want to be very clear as to what their direction is.
I would say the speakers from tonight, specifically regarding everything that we talked about that's not Narcon, you know, but from CUPHD, Board of Health, if the sheriff has information about what it's like, boots on the ground, that would be good. There was conversation about, Julia, would your office like to speak again, or do we feel like we're good? Or
I think if you hear from somebody from the drug court, it would probably be appropriate. I'm also going to suggest that you hear from maybe Lynn Canfield or someone from RPC to talk about how they, you know, analyze requests for proposals for funding, and, you know, maybe that they could take this on as an assist as well, because there's forms and there's analysis and all kinds of things about whether, you know, a proposal is appropriate. And I'm telling you from my experience, particularly with the juvenile court, the juvenile diversion funds, you know, which I don't know if you, some of you might not even know what I'm talking about, right? Because with the quarter cent sales tax, you have a chunk of money that is set aside for juvenile delinquency prevention. And way back in the way back times, those proposals were taken by the board and people would come to the board and say, I need $5,000 for this or $10,000 for that. And you all would decide, the board members would decide, and it got really ugly. And it was, you know, well, it got really political and ugly, frankly. And ultimately the board decided to give that to the mental health board to, you know, take that on as the manager of that, of those funds, so that they could do their analysis based on, you know, on their expertise on those issues. And that, you know, ended up ultimately then funding the Youth Assessment Center. So I'm just suggesting you might want somebody, you know, we have those people, Lynn Canfield, and, you know, they know what they're doing when it comes to analyzing requests for funding. So I think you should take, let them help you.
Excellent suggestions. Thank you. All right. Does everybody?
No, sorry.
No, sorry.
Is there interest in doing a general conversation with GIS about mapping of incidents, or do we want to put that on hold for now?
If they could do that, that would be helpful. The more information we have to begin, the better we can figure out where we're going.
Okay.
So if they can, yeah.
Okay. I'll have an initial conversation. I don't know what kind of questions she'll have about scope of work. So yeah, and then the cost, yeah.
Well, thank you everybody for coming tonight, those that came, thank you. Do we have any other comments before we finish? Aaron?
Well, I was just wondering, yeah, do we want to, not that I have, but a specific date suggestion for next month. I'm not going to suggest a specific date, but I was just wondering, do we sounds like we're maybe in agreement, wait till next month, for most of us, but, you know, what time of the month? I was just my question on that, or Megan could have some input, obviously, too, with the calendar, and Julie has something on that.
Yeah, Megan, do you have any dates available at this moment?
The room's available for sure on 10-4 and 10-11, which are Wednesdays as well.
10-11 would be 6 weeks.
Okay. And also the week before that, so the last week of September, it's open Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
And then
That would be the night before our special budget session, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So wait. We don't want to do that.
I think I have mental health board in this room.
I showed it was canceled. It may not be. Then
you may have just given me great news. I personally vote for the 4th, but you know.
All right, next meeting on October 4th, and. All right, now there is no chair's report, and at whatever time it is right now. Oh, wait, Julia?
Matt and I were just talking, and I was a little bit frustrated, I think, at the beginning because Michelle was talking about, you know, we talked to the sheriff, and the sheriff says, I already have funding for this, I already have that. This isn't a grant. This is our money. And the document, the exhibit that you have, first page at the bottom, it says, as used in this Schedule A, words like expand, fund, and provide, or the like, shall not indicate a preference for new or existing programs. So what that means is that you can use this money instead of tax dollars that you're already using, you know, and that might be something to think about if you're trying to, you want to get going, you know, or as we're talking about budgeting. So when the sheriff says, oh, I don't need this, I have Narcan that I pay for somehow or another, or drug, you know, drug court or probation or whatever. I mean, this is a little bit different than a lot of the grant funding, you know, that we're talking about. This is not grant funding, it's settlement. So there are those limitations don't exist.
Thank you. Now, with nothing else, we're calling this meeting adjourned at 7:41 p.m. Thanks to all that came.
Get in line.
I'll be a nice pick. I won't be mean about it. There's enough nastiness out there. I'm not gonna ask
that.
Yeah,
I appreciate it. Try to keep it true.
Later on.
Yeah.
That's why I like we live on 5 acres. I